tonight at 7 on WILL-FM's Evening Concert. It's the New York Philharmonic this week. Music director Alan Gilbert leads the group in two of the symphonies of Danish composer Carl Nielsen, the first and the fourth. Also on the program, Nielsen's Helios Overture. That's Nielsen's Helios Overture and his first and fourth symphonies on the New York Philharmonic this week, tonight at 7, on the Evening Concert on WILL, FM 90.9.
You're listening to 90.9 WILL, FM and HD Urbana, NPR and classical music for Central Illinois. A flood watch is in effect through Friday morning. Today there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the mid-60s. Showers and thunderstorms tonight, some may be severe, lows in the upper 40s, wind gusts to around 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and windy, a 40% chance of showers in the morning, the high tomorrow around 50, wind gusts to around 45 miles per hour.
Eyes like a morning star, cheeks like a rose. Laura was a pretty girl, God Almighty knows. Weep all ye little rains, wail winds wail. All along, along, along the Colorado Trail. Laura was a laughing girl, joyful in the day. Laura was a darling girl, now she's gone away. Weep all ye little rains, wail winds wail. All along, along, along the Colorado Trail. Sixteen years she graced the earth, and all life was good. Now all life is buried there, beneath a cross of wood. Weep all ye little rains, wail winds wail. All along, along, along the Colorado Trail. Ride all the lonely night, ride all the day. Keep that herd moving on, moving on its way. Weep all ye little rains, wail winds wail. All along, along, along the Colorado Trail. Winds coming down the gulch, night birds cry alarm. Wished I'd stayed in Abilene, nice and dry and warm. Weep all ye little rains, wail winds wail. All along, along, along the Colorado Trail. All along, along, along the Colorado Trail.
A traditional song, the name, of course, the Colorado Trail, from the CD called When the River Ran Backward, Adventures in Folk Song, with Adam Miller, lead vocal, and also performing on auto harps and in other songs on guitars, and various backing singers. there with him. He is going to be joining us very shortly here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The show's your connection to local performances. He's going to be in our area a couple of times over the next couple of days, tonight in Clinton and tomorrow in Chatsworth, Illinois. Coming up, we will be having live in our studios some members of the University of Illinois Black Chorus, which celebrates 45 years this year, and they will be doing their annual Moms Day concert at the university on Saturday. And members of the chorus and their longtime director, Ollie Watts Davis, joining us also in about 28 minutes or so. But first, Adam Miller is with us live in the studio. And I saw him on a calendar that was more or less handed to me and hadn't happened to have heard the name. And I saw Auto Harp Virtuoso. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting right there. Adam, what is that saying, really?
Well, it's sort of an unbelievable brand, you know. Most people who have heard the auto harp have heard it in a classroom situation where it wasn't very well tuned or very well played. And so it's kind of like saying you're a professional kazoo player. It's like, what's this guy going to do? Auto harp virtuoso? Is it really going to be good?
Yeah. How many of you are there in the world? Meaning virtuosi.
There are a lot of very good auto harp players, but very few of them who tour or make a living at it. In my generation, in this century, there may be five or six of us on the planet, you know, people who professionally play the auto harp and tour and perform. It's a pretty small territory to try to defend. But when you have a well-made auto harp that is well-tuned, there's a terrific reaction you get from the audience when that wall of sound hits them, you know, and the tears well up in their eyes, and they hear those chords ringing through their head and their abdomen. It's a pretty physical experience for the audience.
Mm. What made you decide to pick up the auto harp?
Well, the auto harp was an instrument. I was born in 1960, so when I was a kid, they were in the classroom. The kindergarten teacher had one, and on children's folk records, you heard them. But it was about 30 years ago, somebody loaned me an old Sears Silvertone, really cheap auto harp over a two-week holiday vacation, and it was true love. At the end of that two-week period, I ordered this very good custom-made auto harp because I finally found the instrument that I wanted to play.
The one you still have.
I now have, I guess, seven auto harps in the house, and an eighth one is coming. But this was the first custom-built auto harp I bought sitting here in the studio with me, and I still tour with it.
And you were how old again?
I guess it was about 25 years ago. I was in my late 20s.
Oh, so you came to it relatively late.
Yeah, I was a guitar player from my teenage years on, but never felt any sense that I would be a great guitar player or that it would be an instrument that I could express all my musical ideas on. Once I got into the auto harp, it's pretty hard. I mean, everything works on the auto harp. Scott Joplin, Rodgers and Hammerstein, the Nutcracker Suite. All sorts of wonderful, strange music works on
it. Now you're making me want to make some requests here. Little Scott Joplin sounds really interesting.
I wish I had a chromatic auto harp
with me. Oh, it requires a special
one. That's why one has seven auto harps, sort of like when the harmonica player shows up with a series of harmonicas. These are diatonic instruments, which means that if you were sitting at the piano and you started on the white keys at C and just went up through that seven-note scale we all know, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti. That's how these harps are set up. But originally, when the auto harp was new 100 years ago, they were all chromatic with all the half steps, the white and the black keys. And when you have a chromatic auto harp, there's really a lot of beautiful stuff you can play. And there's a couple things on the CD that are chromatic that you can hear.
As it happens, last Friday we had a harmonica player in here. And he did have his little diatonics and then also his big chromatic.
There you go. Yeah, the harmonica is the best way to explain it to people when they come up after the show and say, what's the difference between your auto harps?
And there you go. Well, why don't we have just launch into something live here?
Very good.
And then I'll ask you some other stuff, but I'm more interested in hearing you. We don't have you for all that long.
I'm going to play a little song here on this. This harp is made out of mulberry wood with a Sitka spruce top. And I'll play you a song that Harold Arlen wrote 75 years ago that got the award for being the song of the century, Over the Rainbow.
It's gotten to be one of my favorite songs over the last few years, I guess, maybe even just since I've been doing this particular radio show. I heard it, of course, in The Wizard of Oz and enjoyed it well enough, but I think I've come to appreciate it more as a song that is really timeless, but also bears a number of different types of interpretations, and is just flat out gorgeous. Thanks for playing it on the
My
show.
My pleasure. I think a lot of people feel similarly about that song. It seems to speak to a lot of people.
Well, it's a guy named Tommy Emmanuel, actually, the guitarist, who talked to me once in a phone interview about that song, what it meant to him and why it was so important, that I think sort of restarted my interest in it. And then when he played here live, the first of a couple of times, I asked him to play it, and it absolutely upheld his, you know, what I expected based on his love of the song. And that might actually be really what got me going on it. Adam Miller is with us live on Live and Local today. He's going to be playing tonight at 7 o'clock at the Vespasian Warner Public Library in Clinton. Tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock, he'll be at Chatsworth Elementary School. You probably can't go to that one unless you're really small and can infiltrate yourself into the school. But you can go tomorrow night, I presume, to the American Legion in Chatsworth for a concert that also starts at 7 o'clock. And then if you are up and around northern Illinois, particularly around the Chicago suburbs and so on, he's doing a swing through a lot of small towns there from the 7th through the 13th, and for that matter, if you're going to be in southern Illinois in Carbondale, he's going there next, I think. So you can follow Adam around Illinois for the next week or so. The tune you played to start, a traditional tune, this tune you played just now, a great American songbook tune. And you actually brought up yourself before we actually opened the microphones here that somebody had said to you, how can you be a folk singer without writing your own songs?
In the 21st century, most of the places where they have folk music, the performers are singer-songwriters. And I'm kind of the weirdo in this generation in that I'm not a songwriter and don't aspire to be a songwriter. I'm a song collector and a folklorist and have a great affection for the old songs that remain in the oral tradition. So, you know, when I do a concert, I'm usually playing songs that are from 50 to 500 years old. It takes me a long time to get inside of a song. Usually, even if I learn it from a contemporary, they're dead by the time I'm inside it enough to put it on a CD, because it takes me a few decades to really inhabit the song. And there are so many people who are writing songs that, except for a few of them, nobody's going to be singing those songs after those people pass away. So I tend to gravitate to the songs that people know and their parents sang and they grew up with, and try to ring those historical memory bells when you perform for people. Go back into their childhoods and bring up some songs they haven't thought of in a long time.
You make reference somewhere in your biographical material to being having an orographic memory or something like that?
Some people say that you have an audiographic memory. Like a photographic memory, I remember everything I heard. If you get me somebody who's about my age, I can go through all the commercials they ran in 63 and 64 and 65 that no one else seems to care to remember. And I have to be careful what I listen to, because it's going to stay in my head for a long time. Even the songs I heard in the steakhouse in Florida last month, be careful what you listen to, because those little earworms will stay in your head. But I've always had a great gift for memorization and remember songs upon hearing them once or twice. And that's a terrific asset in the work I do.
I'm sure so. You've generally learned songs by rote.
I do, and now that it's my job, now that I do this professionally, it's really delightful to, whenever I'm coming upon a song or a book of songs or hearing a song, reminding myself that, hey, this is your job. You better learn that thing and learn all the words and learn where it came from and learn how it got there and find the best key and get it filed away in that psychic landfill that we call memory.
And this, you started doing this business as a kid, meaning learning songs and setting a very early goal for yourself.
You never know when you're a kid that other people don't have the same experience you have. all my friends were listening to rock and roll, and I was collecting 78s. You know, in elementary school, I was the guy going through the junk stores and friends' grandparents' record collections looking for those old records. And I had good instincts about wanting to find old songs that were collectible. I was fortunate to grow up in the 1960s, so the first thing I heard was Pete Seeger. And there was folk music on the radio. And there were folk singers. And then, as I say, as a teenager, I got that job in public radio as a music director and received every new folk album in English from all over the world. And that helped build my repertoire, not realizing that someday, you know, all of this would be the human jukebox experience of what you had collected in your memory would be your repertoire. So they had asked for a program about Christmas in the Trenches and the Singing Soldiers for the program on Friday night at the library, I believe, in the town of Chatsworth. And so it's kind of, you know, sit down and go through your brain and try to remember those Singing Soldier songs and try to get the words and the chords to float up to the top of the ocean that is memory and snatch them off the surface while they're there.
So that must be the Clinton Library, which is tonight.
No, I think it's tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That'll be at the American Legion.
Yeah. I do so many programs that I can only take it one day at a time. I have to go to my website just like you would do. Where am I tomorrow? Let's see where I'm going today.
I imagine so. Well, do you have a sample of that sort of song?
Let me see if I can pull one up out of my hat for you. This song was probably made up sometime between World War I and World War II. Come on and join the Air Force and get your flying pay. You'll never have to work at all, just fly around all day. While others toil and study hard and soon grow old and blind, we'll take the air without a care and you will never mind. You will never mind, you will never mind. Come on and join the Air Force and you will never mind. Come on, get promoted just as high as you desire. You're riding on the gravy train when you're an Air Force flyer. But just when you're about to be a general, you'll find the engine coughs, the wings fall off, and you will never mind. You will never mind, you will never mind. Come on and join the Air Force, and you will never mind. You're flying o'er the ocean and you hear the engine spit. You see the prop come to a stop and the gosh darn engine quit. The ship won't float, you cannot swim, the shore is miles behind. But what a dish for crabs and fish, and you would never mind. You will never mind, you will never mind. Come on and join the Air Force and you will never mind. You will never mind, you will never mind. Come on and join the Air Force and you will never mind.
Is it safe to say that it was not a recruiting song?
No. You see, what's funny is that all the patriotic songs that people know and love and want the children to sing at schools and sing on Veterans Day are written by professional songwriters getting paid money, sitting in offices somewhere, composing. The real songs that soldiers sing generally have four-letter words, talk about women and missing them, how the food is bad, how dangerous the work is.
And this comes under that lighter category.
Yeah, there's this whole no matter what war you're dealing with, you kind of go through and see the real soldier songs, talk about the drudgery of the job, how boring it might be, how cold it is, where you have to sleep, what you have to eat, wishing you were somewhere else. These seem to be the universal themes for people who have to participate in wars and the folk songs they create.
Well, I certainly hope that folks don't wish that you were somewhere else right now, because here live on Live and Local, we have Adam Miller, a folk singer, and as you're hearing, a player of the auto harp. And we might get him to play guitar coming up, but it's amazing how time is rapidly passing already. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we have support for our broadcast today from 40 North 88 West with the 12th Annual Boneyard Arts Festival, April 10th through the 13th. With venues throughout the county, the festival, in conjunction with local businesses, is a celebration of music, dance, arts, and theater. Details are available at 40north.org. You got interested not only in the songs themselves, but also the stories behind the songs.
Song provenance is very interesting to me. I can't kind of go to bed at night till I find out how old the song was, and was there another song that it was based on, and where'd the tune come from, what country did it come from. That's very interesting to me, and I find that Americans are all very interested in history. Seems like everybody in this country wants to know, how did they plug into the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the cowboys and Indians, or the settling of Illinois, the steamboat days. You notice how popular the History Channel is. TV series like Roots and Lonesome Dove. There seems to be a great interest in history in America. And as I deal with audiences as I go across the country, this seems to be interesting to them too. I could sing Froggy Went A-Courtin', but it's much more interesting if you find out that it's the oldest English language folk song ever printed in a book, and it's been there since 1549, and there are 200 different versions of it today. That adds dimension and depth and is usually news to people in my audiences.
Well, it's certainly all of that news to me.
Yeah. So,
and how many of those 200 do you know, by the way?
I could do most of them for you, but I have a feeling we'll be encroaching on the next performing act's time. But I generally try to do a couple of them for audiences just to show the contrast. And some of these old English language ballads, once you get on this side of the Mississippi, you know, you're going to find a different version in every one of the old states. So that's one of the things I love about these folk songs, is that they are from the days before the printing press. They've been passed on in an oral tradition, and the songs are always changing. You know, the way the song was sung 200 years ago is different how it was sung 100 years ago, different than how it's sung today. And sometimes it's an interesting program to follow a single song through a couple of hundred years and show how that melody gets reused over and over again, or a series of words as a song evolves. Pete Seeger's dad, Charles Seeger, was a folklorist, and he really put it succinctly. He said that looking at a folk song on paper is a lot like looking at a picture of a bird in flight. The bird was doing something different just before the picture was taken, and something different right after the picture was taken. And the same is true of when you wrote down the folk song. A year before, it was sung differently. A few years afterward, it was sung differently. So that gives me a lot of fodder in my programs to pick certain songs that are so well-loved, the melodies get recycled every 10 years, and do a set of songs to show people how that works.
So when you find so many different versions of songs like Froggy Went A-Courtin', or if you find songs that nobody does anymore, maybe except you and one or two other people around, how do you find them?
Well, this is my interest and my passion, and just as a songwriter wants to be associated with a few songs that they've written that nobody else does, I find a few old songs that nobody's touching anymore, and I sit on them. I got a YouTube video of something called The Frog Song that's had thousands and thousands of hits, and it's on my kids' CD, and I don't think there's anybody alive who sings it anymore. And I get a lot of mileage out of that. And there are a number of other things that I do that... Do you guys know about Art Theme?
Art Theme?
Art Theme was the guy in Illinois who did this sort of work when I was younger, and he's one of the inspirations for the work that I do. If you saw somebody with a guitar on a steamboat in the 70s or 80s or 90s, it would have been Art Theme. And he's retired now, and I'm going to go play a concert for him in his assisted living facility next week. But, you know, there are people – what I'm doing is something that's been done for a long continuum. Before me, there was Art Theme, and before Art, there were people in Pete Seeger's generation. Before Pete, there were people in Carl Sandburg's generation. And all of us just reuse these traditional songs for the 20 or 30 or 40 years that we're using them. And then, like a parrot or a rare violin, you pass them on to someone younger when you're too old to do it. So now that Art's retired, I feel free to use some of his repertoire. Those songs aren't getting used anymore. Pete Seeger's gone. Again, songs that Pete used to sing. I figure if I don't sing them, they'll disappear. And I got the frog song from Sam Hinton, who's been gone for 5 years. So I won't let the frog song disappear in my time, but I'm expecting that there'll be some younger person, when I'm old and white-headed, who'll be ready to pick these up. And some of these songs really do disappear. Some of these songs stop being sung, and then they're gone, and there's no way to bring them back. So one of the things I'm hoping to accomplish is to delay the time that these songs will disappear, push them on for a few more decades.
Well, we better let you do one more before we let you go.
Very good.
And here comes the guitar. We've had two different auto harps, and here's the guitar.
So I do a lot of hobo songs, and this is supposed to be the oldest of the hobo songs. Goes back to the 1890s. I got it out of a book written by George Milburn back in 1930 called The Hobo's Hornbook, and this is the one about the hobo's last ride. In the Dodge City yards on the Santa Fe stood a freight made up for the East. The engineer with his oil and waste was grooming the great iron beast. 10 cars back in the murky dust, a boxcar door swung wide. The hobo helped his pal on board to start on his last long ride. The lantern swung, the train pulled out, the engine had gathered speed. The engineer threw the throttle wide, locked to his fiery steed. 10 cars back in the empty box, that hobo rolled a pill. The pair of match at his partner's face, dark, white, and deathly still. As the train went along on the coupling joints, a song to the rambler's ear. That hobo spoke to that still white form, his pal for many a year. Now it's a mighty long time we ramble, Jack, with the luck of men who roam. Back doorsteps for a dining room and a boxcar for a home. We rambled down on the eastern route, the tops of the Chesapeake, and rode that Leadville narrow gauge in the days of old Cripple Creek. And we rambled down through sunny Cal on the rails of the old SP. And all you had through good and bad, well, a half belonged to me. And you made me promise to you, pal, that if I lived and you cashed in, to take you back to the old churchyard and bury you there with your kin. Well, you must have known that I'd keep my word because you said I was all right. Well, I'm keeping my promise to you, pal. I'm taking you home tonight. Now, I didn't have any money to send you back. I'm taking you home on the fly. A decent way for a beau to go back to the by and by. As the train whittled along on the ribbons of steel, straight through to the east it sped. The engineer in his high cab seat kept his eyes on the rails ahead. 10 cars back in the empty box, the lonely hobo sighed. For the days of old, his pal's cold had taken his last long ride. For the days of old, his pal's cold had taken his last long ride.
Adam Miller will be at the Vespasian Warner Public Library tonight at 7 o'clock in Clinton, Illinois, and then tomorrow at the American Legion in Chatsworth, also at 7 o'clock, with a stop at Chatsworth Elementary School in the afternoon, and then Southern Illinois next, and Northern Illinois between the 7th and the 13th. You can get his complete schedule and all kinds of information about him and folk singing at folksinging.org, folksinging.org. Adam, thanks very much for joining us on the show. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Stay tuned next for members of the University of Illinois Black Chorus with their director, Ollie Watts Davis, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
I know.
Illinois Black Chorus, led by Dr. Ollie Watts Davis, from a CD from some years ago now, Have Thine Own Way, Lord, is the name of the CD. It's also the name of one of the tunes on there. The University of Illinois Black Chorus, celebrating its 45th year in existence in 2013-2014, and they will be performing their annual Moms Day concert at the university this coming Saturday, 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Always at least a couple of choruses on Moms Day. The Women's Glee Club will be performing in the afternoon, Did the Men's Glee Club do Mom's Day? They must do Dad's Day.
They do Dad's Day.
That's logical enough. That is the voice of Ollie Watts Davis, a longtime faculty member at the University of Illinois, former student at the University of Illinois, and 34th year as director now for you?
34th year, that's correct.
How did you manage to inherit this ensemble? Is that the right word?
Well, I think that's correct. I actually came as a graduate student, as you alluded to, and one day in the hallway I met the conductor at the time, Andre Thomas. He invited me to a rehearsal and then introduced me as his assistant conductor. The next year,
Did you know he was going to introduce
you? I did not know that, Kevin. But it was a wonderful happenstance, and I've been delighted to take the helm and to have served in this capacity over the years.
We have I just counted 10 members, I think, of the chorus. With us today to do some live singing. The chorus is now about how many strong in total?
They're about 70 this semester.
Is that a typical size over the years?
Well, it's a little less than we usually have.
Really?
But we've had quite a graduation rate, which is wonderful. And we haven't had aggressive recruiting, but we'll do that in the fall. But it's a nice size.
Has there ever been much of a challenge to recruit for the chorus, or does the sound itself just draw people to?
Well, it's not been a challenge for us, actually. The music, as you mentioned, is what is the draw, and the sense of community. And the students, they find a nice supportive family atmosphere with the choir, although they work really hard. But I think that is what really is what encourages students to participate and stay during their tenure as students at the university.
It's called the Black Chorus, and most people in the chorus are Black, but not everybody. And it seems that there's been more non-Black students over the years. So does the name now pertain at least as much to specifically the music, or did it always pertain mostly to the music?
I can't speak at its formation back in 1968, but I can say that since 1981, the name of the choir has really reflected the music that we perform. We perform the music of Black Americans in all of its genres, you know, formal music, popular music, classical music, R&B, soul, pop, you know, you name it. The composition, as you suggested, does entail a large number of African-American students, but we're so fortunate to be a very diverse population. The choir is very inclusive, and so we have non-Black students as well.
When you say, you said formal music, what does that mean as opposed to, say, classical?
Well, in the African-American tradition, we say that the notated spiritual is part of our formal tradition. And so I guess it's really similar to the classical tradition. So when we do the arranged spirituals from some of the hallmark composers like William Dawson or Hall Johnson or even Moses Hogan, that's part of our formal music tradition.
And I was looking at the program for the concert on Saturday night, and I think you have a Moses Hogan.
We do.
We have two, actually. Two of those and two Roland Carters.
Yes.
All of which are arrangements of spirituals?
Well, the two by Moses Hogan are arrangements, the classic Elijah Rock and Didn't My Lord Deliver Daniel. And then by Roland Carter, we actually have a composed anthem, In Bright Mansions. Mm-hmm. And then he has taken the national Negro hymn, Lift Every Voice and Sing, and set it in a very concert classical arrangement. Mm-hmm. So that's also an anthem.
So those are the four pieces with which the concert will open on Saturday.
Yes.
What would you like to start with here?
Well, I'd like to start with a spiritual. We'll do an arrangement by a gentleman by the name of Raymond Wise, and the arrangement is I Opened My Mouth to the Lord.
The University of Illinois Black Chorus, I should say members of the chorus under the direction of Ollie Watts Davis here on Live and Local, live in our studio.
I opened my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back. I
will go, I shall go, to see what the end's going to be. I open my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back. I will go, I shall go, to see what the end's going to be.
I open my mouth,
I open my mouth,
I open my mouth, and then I will turn back. I open my mouth to the Lord, and I won't turn back. I will go, I shall go, 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 to see what the end's going to be.
You know, I had asked you ahead of time, Ollie, that whether a small subset of the group would do justice to the full sound of the group, and you said, oh, yes. And I have to say you're right.
Well, thank you.
It's a different sound. I mean,
it's
you know,
a
it's a different sound.
Yes.
One of the things that I've, you know, I've certainly noted from performances of the chorus, particularly when you used to, and maybe still do, at Smith Hall.
Yes, our fall concert
The fall
is at concert Smith Hall.
Is always there. That, I mean, that just rocks the rafters at that place.
Yeah, we send out quite a reverberation.
Yeah, even more so than in the Great Hall at the Krannert Center, which
yes.
is a little more polite in a way, the sound of the
sure.
place. How, you said this is music of Black America. I've popped my head into numerous rehearsals over the years, mm-hmm. And I rarely see any music. Any written out music in the hands of the students. Is most of it taught by rote, by matter of tradition, or how's the music?
I would say that the music that is conceived basically from the oral tradition is taught in the same manner most of the time. However, we now have gospel selections that have been notated, and we have the scores, which is really wonderful because it can afford a larger disbursement of the music to maybe those who don't come, you know, from the tradition. I select the rote transmission way of teaching for expediency because I have a large crowd, and also I'm teaching a lot of different musical things along with just teaching the music, the notes and the rhythms, nuance, style, expression, all of that is easier, I think, for me to teach as the professor to them in a mimicking manner than if they were, you know, kind of in a score. But we do have notated music. All of the arrangements that we're going to open with are notated, of course. And as I said before, some of the gospel selections also.
And I imagine that some read music better than others, and there's that expediency as well, as is true for many choirs.
You know, Kevin, we had a very interesting thing that happened this semester. In Bright Mansions by Roland Carter, I came with scores thinking, okay, we won't just start and teach this by rote as I usually do. We'll do the music. And an interesting thing happened. After them reading it, reading the score, and singing beautifully, I said, well, put the scores down because we don't perform with scores in hand. I believe that they should know the music, internalize it, memorize it. Then they are in a position to basically give it away in performance. And it was amazing. They had read the music beautifully. They could follow the notes with the notated scores, but they could not sing it without that. So they had not internalized it. So you know what I did? I went back to my safety teaching pedagogy, and I taught the piece from the beginning by rote. And now they own it.
Well, I imagine there's something, too, about, you know, when you're looking on the page, it can end up being a series of notes.
It can be.
If that's how you learn it. And, I mean, that's certainly a criticism that's often been leveled at white choirs trying to sing black spirituals, is that they learn it off the notes on the page, and then And it might be just that they don't have an inspired director who knows what's going on.
Thank you.
Stylistically. And it doesn't sound, you know, authentic in any way.
Well, I think, even being a classical soprano, that the notated score is a map. And then I have to find the real music. And so I bring not only my musicianship, correct notes, correct rhythms, et cetera, stylistic preferences, but I also bring my heart, my soul, my intellect, all of my emotions to bear and create this beautiful thing that we love in an aria or an art song. And so I think it's the same when you're singing choral music, and especially when you're singing music of the African-American tradition. You have to bring all of that to being and allow that score to just kind of guide you. But it's up to you. It's incumbent upon those who perform it to bring that other important expression.
Well, I guess like so many other types of music, the sooner you get out of your head out of the page, if you're using the music, the sooner you can probably internalize the thing.
I think so.
At all. What do you want to do next?
Well, I think we'll do another a cappella piece, which is an unaccompanied a cappella gospel song from an earlier tradition. And then we'll sort of evolve into the contemporary, okay? It's entitled The Storm Is Passing Over.
Members of the University of Illinois Black Chorus, who will perform their annual Moms Day concert this Saturday at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Ollie Watts Davis is their conductor. They're live in our studio on Live and Local.
Take courage, my soul, and let us journey on. Though the night is dark and I am far from home, thanks be to God, the morning light appears. The storm is passing over, the storm is passing over. The storm is passing over, hallelujah. Take courage, my soul, and let us journey on. Though the night is dark and I am far from home, thanks be to God, the morning light appears. The storm is passing over, the storm is passing over, the storm is passing over, hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. The storm is passing over, the storm is passing over. The storm is passing over. Hallelujah. 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 The storm is passing over. The storm is passing over. The storm is passing over. Hallelujah.
You know, I have on my phone, I have Pandora set up.
Yes.
I'm sure a lot of people do. And one of the channels that I have is for the group Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's almost what I thought I was listening to there for a minute.
Well, that's quite a compliment.
I mean, that's an all-male choir, of course.
Yeah.
But where I wanted to go with that is that I guess you said this is an older type of gospel music.
It is.
And there's got to be some sort of stylistic continuity from the traditional sorts of songs that they're doing, say, for example, in South Africa, and what's being done in, you know, in American gospel.
Sure.
What was done in American gospel?
Sure. The continuity is the impetus of freedom, you know, the whole theme. This is probably, well, not probably, it was actually used during the 60s and the 70s, during the Civil Rights Movement, and as a freedom song. And as we know, the songs from the Civil Rights Movement comes from the African-American church, largely. They were hymns and gospel songs that were, some of the text was changed. This one, it doesn't really have a religious reference, but the music And the meaning behind it is that we're passing through. Life is a journey. You know, sometimes it's difficult, it's hard. There's a storm on the horizon, or you may be in the storm, or you may be entering the storm, or you just come out of a storm. But the encouragement is the storm is passing over, and the great praise, hallelujah, is what you end up with.
There's also something about the call and response. I mean, there wasn't really call and response in that song, but it was that style. You know, a certain amount of repetition of gesture that's going on.
It's sort of call and response as a form in Black music is always implied. Even if there isn't a soloist up front, sort of like you are responding to something. If not the soloist, the choir is responding to the unasked question from the audience. So there's those pauses are built in, I think, intentionally. Where someone could actually do a lead-in, and we're going to do some of that today as well. They could lead in and the choir would respond in that regard. But regardless, that form is throughout Black musical expression.
Well, since you mentioned that, you want to go to one of those?
Let's do it.
We have members of the University of Illinois Black Chorus with us live in the studio, and we have a soloist in front. Who's our soloist?
My name is Erica Thomas, and I am the treasurer of Black Chorus.
Money people are important.
You are so amazing.
your power so amazing, amazing.
Soloist Erica Thomas with members of the University of Illinois Black Chorus. And who's at the piano?
This is one of my assistant directors, Quandra Clark.
And another of your assistant directors was directing.
Yes, Ashley Davis.
Somewhat related to you.
Somewhat.
I believe.
Yes.
When she walked in the room earlier, I knew that.
Okay.
And we've met on occasion anyway. You know, I wanted to ask any of the chorus members who wants to answer this. Some of you are naturally moving with the music, moving your hands and so on. I'm just kind of curious about what some of your own musical background is that you bring to this chorus, and then where the chorus has taken you from where you started. Somebody. Erica.
Hi. Well, my musical background is similar to what this chorus presents. You know, I've come from a background where I've sang traditional gospel music all of my life, and being a part of the University of Illinois Black Chorus has been an experience. It's a life-changing experience. It's more than just, you know, singing. It helps me get through my week. You know, I come to rehearsal and it just lifts my spirit. And singing this music, it just uplifts me every time, and it encourages me that we encourage someone else. So that's my motivation behind singing this music.
Have you encountered in the chorus the sorts of types of music that you had not encountered before?
Yes, I wasn't as familiar with singing spirituals as often, such as Elijah Rock by Moses Hogan. But it's been an experience, and I thoroughly enjoy singing in all the music that we present.
Well, it was certainly evident that you thoroughly enjoyed singing that,
yes.
That last song. Somebody else with maybe a different background musically?
Well, Ilana? Hi, I'm Alana Braverman. This is my third semester in Black Chorus, and I have a completely different background. All my life, I have been singing. I was in countless musical productions in high school. I've been in choir for years and years taking voice lessons, but I have never sang gospel music before. I'm actually Jewish. I had never even been in a church, and I had been recommended to be part of this chorus, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I can't say I have sang any of the music we've done in here before, but I truly enjoy the experience, and it encourages me as well.
As a Jewish person, singing in many cases a lot of music about Jesus, where does that take you spiritually?
I can't say. I mean, obviously, I believe something different, but it's just the feeling of being part of a family and a community. And I have to say, the first concert, I was actually moved to tears when I looked outside, or I looked out into the audience, and I just saw people on their feet crying, laughing, singing along with us. It's just such a beautiful experience that I have never been able to experience before. So that doesn't really matter to me as much, because I'm affecting someone else in a positive way.
And you're being affected internally one way or another,
correct.
Whatever the words may be.
Yes.
The music carries so many things along. Mm-hmm. I should say that our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. I think we have time for one more.
Our final selection will be a gospel anthem by a very prominent composer, pianist, conductor, Richard Smallwood. It's sort of a staple in the Black religious expression in the Black church, and it's entitled Total Praise. And it is taken from one of the Psalms, and I think those who hear it will recognize the verses immediately. So I hope you enjoy it.
Members of the University of Illinois Black Chorus, led by Ollie Watts Davis.
With pianist Peter Daly.
Thank you.
Members of the U of I Black Chorus, but a subset of the full choir, which you can hear in its entirety on Saturday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana, their annual Moms Day concert. And I'm looking at the program here, and it's going to run pretty much the gamut of all the types of music that Ollie Watts Davis mentioned earlier. And free concert? Not free concert.
Not a free concert.
Not a free concert. But
tickets
not
are available. Not expensive. Yeah. But tickets are available at the Krannert Center ticket office.
KrannertCenter.com. Thank you very much for bringing the choir in, and to everybody for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's been a treat to hear you. And join us tomorrow for another program of Live and Local. I'll be talking with the American leader of the Alash Ensemble, who are a bunch of Tuvan throat singers, which would be a very different kind of singing on the program tomorrow. Looking forward to that at 4 o'clock. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.
We join that entire community in honoring those who lost their lives. Every single one of them was an American patriot.
The community of Fort Hood in Killeen, Texas. It's Thursday, April 3rd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. Coming up, how the town of Killeen is trying to cope with another shooting at Fort Hood.
You learn a lot about a community and how it deals with adversity. We've just had more experience than many other communities in dealing with adversity.
Also, these stories: are political conventions necessary, and the big lobbying effort underway to ban online gambling.
Gambling is a vice and is something that should be done in a limited way, like alcohol, like many things.
He just happens to advise the very powerful foe of online gambling, casino owner Sheldon Adelson. Now the news.